Hello world and welcome to another episode of LJ Presents. Today's guest is Costanza Eliana Chinia. She is a journalist, activist, educator, speaker, and producer. But I knew her when she was my yoga teacher many years ago. Now, she's one of the producers and hosts of the Stranger Fruit podcast, as well as a regular contributor for the Young Turks on the Rebel HQ channel. During the time of this recording, we were discussing a lot of things that were happening during the upheaval of the pandemic and the George Floyd riots and all the other things that were happening to us as a country, especially as it affects black and brown people of today. So, without further ado, I present to you Mrs. Costanza Eliana Chinia. You know, it's a trip that I'll tell you right now how, like, you came back onto my radar. Ooh. Right? And that was, you know, during the course of the pandemic, recently, like, we're going into, like, okay, this is a good solid year. And mm-hmm. I was in the middle of trying to figure out what I wanted to do for season 3 of my show. And mm-hmm. I was like, well, you know, during the course of the pandemic, then turned into a whole social uprising, like, my show took just drastic mm-hmm. left turn. Like, it was, oh, kind of free flowing. Hey, I'm going to talk about whatever I want to talk about. And then, right. you know, all the killings happened. I was like, nope. Black, BIPOC, black, fuck y'all, black, blah, 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 exactly. blah, blah, black.
As you should.
As it goes. And I was like, well, it seems like we're still in the middle of this shutdown and we're still talking right. about the same things that no one's actually learned. So I was like, well, how deep does racism go? Mm-hmm. And then that's when... It was like a good year ago. I was this actor by the name of Makad Brooks, right? Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with him?
No.
So apparently he was on, what was it? One of those, I think Desperate Housewives or something like that. I don't know him from that show.
Okay.
I don't know him from that show. But my son and I are big on the CW superhero shows. And so uh-huh, he plays.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so he plays Jimmy Olsen on Supergirl, and so that's okay. how I know him. And now he's doing they're doing a Mortal Kombat remake, and he's in it.
Oh, he's in that. Well. Nice.
Yeah. So, long story short, he was on Instagram somewhere on some island, and then he was talking about how racism and wellness was like mm-hmm. a big thing. And so I started, you know, when I was listening to him, I was like, damn. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, this shit is everywhere.
Yep.
And then when that came back to my memory, and then I was like, and then I thought about my time at this yoga studio mm-hmm. that I patroned a lot. I don't know if you want to drop names, but I don't really care anymore, so whatever.
I don't care.
Okay, cool. So when I was at, you know, when I was spending my money at Square One Yoga.
Yeah.
And, you know, I started thinking about, like, during this whole pandemic and during this whole social uprising and while we're thinking about how racism plays a hand in everything, I started rethinking about my time, you know, at Square One Yoga, and then noticing how some of the teachers of color have just up and left. And I was like, I didn't know why. I was a customer there. Mm-hmm. So maybe I should have asked, yo, where are all these people?
Right.
And, you know, all of a sudden they were gone. But by that time, the pandemic had started, and then I wasn't going to yoga anymore. I was doing my own practice at home. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of fell into place that right. I was not spending my money there, which, you know, fine, whatever. And then as I was thinking about that, I thought about you, because you were one of my instructors there.
Yeah.
And, you know, let me tell you, you know, I don't know if I actually told you this, but, you know, when I first took your class, I was like, ah, what's a little shorty over here gonna do? I was like, all right. I was like, yeah, she's cool, whatever.
Yeah.
And you, every class, you fucking killed me. Every class, every class. You know, so thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So, you know, just, you know, I'm long-winded. So, you know, just introduce yourself. Tell us what you do. Tell us what you're doing now. And let's get this party started.
For sure. Yeah. Great intro, by the way. Perfect. Yeah. So my name is Constanza Eliana Chinea. And I came to this country when I was 7 years old. So I actually was raised on the island, was not born on the island, but my parents raised me there. Both of them were born and raised in Puerto Rico. And so my experience with both wellness and racism stems from that, from being a little, you know, brown girl coming into a country, not understanding the language or the culture, and having to assimilate very quickly. So when I decided to become a teacher many, many years later, yoga teacher specifically, it was because I was coming out of a long stint with alcohol abuse and severe depression and chronic anxiety, to the point where I was having panic attacks, even at work. I was working as a makeup artist at the time. And I just was extremely unhappy, very unhealthy, abusing alcohol. And it just, it got to a point where I felt physically ill, even though everything was fine with me. Like, I would go to the doctor and they'd say, you know, you're totally fine. Like, you're just drinking severely. And so, so I felt, you know, being somebody who grew up in poverty, there was no option for like rehab. There also wasn't even the option to tell my parents that I had an issue. So there was no therapy. There was no rehab. There wasn't any of that. I had to figure it out by myself. And so it really took a really strong will for me to figure something else out. And so I decided to do a lot of research on wellness. What tools can I find? What type of classes can I take? What is out there that could possibly help me get out of this rut that I was in? And that's how I started. First, I started doing meditation, and then I started practicing yoga. And the type of yoga that I was practicing was very much physical in yoga studios. I was living in Indiana at the time that I started practicing. And so it was very much like physical, vinyasa, hatha, hot yoga, like all of that stuff. I first started out with Ashtanga yoga, which is a slightly more traditional yoga, but it really does focus on the body, on the physical body, and doing really extreme poses. And so that's kind of how I started. And then when I decided to become a teacher, I wanted to do things in a really, in a much more traditional way. I wanted to focus on philosophy and meditation rather than asana. And so I went to my yoga teacher training at the Shivananda Yoga Ashram in California. And I just realized, wow, I have not really been practicing yoga this whole time. I learned so much in the month that I was there and decided to drastically change my approach. And that kind of kick-started my whole teaching career. But within that time, and I've been practicing and teaching for about 11 years now. In that 11-year period, I was experiencing a lot of prejudice, a lot of xenophobia, a lot of racism, and I couldn't quite figure out how to merge my love of social justice into the teaching practice, because everything I was hearing from studio owners or other popular yoga teachers was that if you talk about these things, you're never going to teach again. Like, yoga studios don't want to touch you. You have to figure out how to do the popular, trendy things. And that's how you have to teach, right, in the space. And at the time, and when I decided to take my teacher training, I fell in love with California. So I moved out of the Midwest into California. So these are California teachers that are telling me this. And I heard it from studio owners and teachers alike. And so for a long time, for like the first 4 to 5 years that I was teaching, I didn't really merge my social justice advocacy into my practice at mm-hmm. all. I didn't touch it. I didn't talk about it. It was strictly on my Facebook account. And when I went to go teach yoga at the studio, it was strictly what people wanted.
Gotcha. So you were into social activism as well as yoga pretty much at the same time for the most part?
Oh, for sure. I started off with, even way before I practiced yoga, I started off with animal rights and liberation. And mm-hmm. then it was strong social justice advocacy, mm-hmm. doing, you know, the typical like protesting, sharing things on social media, signing petitions, doing all the things, right? And so when I became a yoga teacher, I thought I can do both. And then I was hearing, no, you can't. So it was a very tough, it was a real huge learning experience that first 4 or 5 years. And then after that, I was just, I was in too much turmoil and a lot of things were happening. Philando Castile, for one, was his murder for me was the catalyst for me deciding, you know what? Screw what everybody else is saying. I'm just gonna, I have to talk about this because this right. is part of our wellness and mental health, right. Especially for people of color who are coming to yoga classes and, you know, being told that whatever happens in the outside world, you know, you have to leave it at the door. You have to be a totally different person when you walk into a yoga class. For me, that wasn't possible. My heart was completely broken when he was murdered. I saw myself in his girlfriend and I couldn't imagine being in her shoes. And so
and the daughter as well in the back seat.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And I'm not a mother, but that just broke my heart. And so that was really the catalyst for me. And then of course we had several other murders happen right around that same time. And yep. so I just decided, you know what, I'm going to talk about this. And I became a radically different yoga teacher, to the point where, yes, there were certain studios that were like, nope, we are looking for something different. So I definitely experienced that, but I didn't care. I decided to, you know, start.
And by different, I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
By different, you mean you're going to what? You're going to be the vanilla version of you, and I'm not trying to put words into your mouth. So.
No, totally.
What? Yeah.
But, so by different, I really mean I was showing up to as a teacher in a way that was very white centric, mm-hmm. and I decided that I could no longer continue to show up in a costume, and I had to now really show up for my community and really be myself and really talk about the things that were affecting myself, my community, my people. And that was radical for the yoga teachers who almost 100% of all yoga studios are owned by white, you know, women. And so that was a radical stance for a lot of them and they just couldn't handle it. So sometimes, yeah. you know, I would mask it. I would, you know, show up to auditions and I would, you know, do the trendy things. And then, you know, I would get hired. And then all of a sudden I'm talking about social justice in the middle of a meditation. And people are like, huh? But that's how you have to do it.
Yeah. Like you dropped it on them in the middle of meditation while they were like in their own bodies and right. in their own selves. Oh, I love it. I love it. Right. You know, and yeah, that's crazy. But definitely, like, you know, some of the things that you touched on, like coming into a yoga class. And the reason why I've been into yoga, like I've practiced extensively since like 2013. And then like my practice has always been about getting my mind right mm-hmm. and the body follows. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And then being a black man, it's always about centering myself. So I don't always I'm not trying to say, oh, so I don't come off angry.
Right.
But taking my anger.
Right.
And taking that moment to feel that emotion, but then also wanting to be able to express it in a way that my point comes across clearly and people can understand. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I'm really particular you know, like when I was actually going to class, mm-hmm. like I was pretty particular about who I went to. Like I actually read the bios and, you know, I read the bios and I got a vibe. So like, mm-hmm. like I was actually, I actually interviewed, Natalie Summers a few mm-hmm. weeks ago. So the way my podcast works is that, you know, I record a lot before I actually, you know, air them.
Yeah.
So I like to have a bank because I'm a one-man band
at this particular point. As we all are.
Yeah. So it definitely saved me a lot of trouble of like trying to like record and edit and spit out week by week. But, you know, like on, you know, for her aspect, you know, her whole thing, you know, was about women empowerment and all that stuff, which awesome, great, you know, mm-hmm. you know, cool. And then I knew I wanted to like pair you guys together as like, not like yin and yang, but kind of like two sides of the same coin to, you know, for the most part. I don't know. We'll see. you know, I usually just go by my vibe, but anyway, yeah. So, you know, I'm reading the bios and I get a particular vibe. I'm like, ah, I'm going to go to that class or no, I'm not. And so, you know, there was all like, I dug the fact that every teacher that I've gone to, I knew there was something else that was going on inside of them. It wasn't just like that vanilla version of them.
Uh-huh.
That was, you know, just basically coming there to work to get a paycheck, but
exactly.
But they were able to do what they loved doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of like an acting, right? Like I just did a commercial that aired, it's going to be online, you know, not too long ago. And it was really fun, you know, but I also know that there are plenty of other auditions that I actually had, I'm not going to say phoning in, but like, I knew that my particular style and my particular look isn't too commercial. It's more character, it's more deep and more intense than the, oh, I'm going to, you know, I love Prozac and, you know, like do the whole holding hands with the other lady and, you know, they talk about all the side effects. It's like, that's not me. Like I do, like I'll audition and I do it, but I know that's not me.
Right.
Right. So, yeah. So there's that. But
yeah.
Oh, and I want to say congratulations. You're getting married.
Yes.
Yes. Awesome. how are you? Because you do what you do, how are we dismantling the institution of marriage with your marriage? Like, I'm just curious because, I mean.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. So, yeah, so I actually, but I've been with my partner for 10 years. So it'll be 10 years in July. And that's when we're having our ceremony. So I say wedding because that's what people are used to. And essentially we're exchanging vows. But
gotcha.
I have been doing this work of dismantling in general, so not just racism, but really just dismantling what are these social constructs that we've grown up with. And I'm a huge nerd at heart, so I love to research. I love to go down the rabbit hole of like different topics, pick them apart, analyze them, put them back together and see if I can make sense of it. And so that's one of, you know, the biggest reasons why I loved yogic philosophy specifically is because they're such heady concepts that you kind of have to take your time with them. And that's what I like. I like taking my time with things. So, so with, you know, marriage specifically, I was doing a lot of research and I went back and forth, right? Because as a young woman growing up in this Western colonized society, I was told that what you do is you go to school, you get a degree, then you find your husband, you get married, you have the kids, you work for the corporation, you make a lot of money, then you retire and you die. So that's kind of, you know, the ideology that I was growing up in. So I was like, oh, marriage is great. So when I was in my relationship in the early years, I was very much about the marriage. I was like, this has to go somewhere. This has to go towards the marriage route. And like I said, you know, I have grown up in poverty my whole life. He has had a slightly different experience, but he is Black and Filipino. So both of his parents are also marginalized people. And so we both have a very similar experience with racism, with finances, with a lack of access, with a lack of opportunity. And so as it was, the type of industrial wedding like ceremony that I wanted to have at that time, we didn't have any money to pay for it. So the times where I actually did want to subscribe to the wedding industrial complex, I literally couldn't afford it. And as time went on and my views started to get a little more in towards decolonization, towards dismantling, one of the things I didn't say earlier is a couple of years ago, I started taking anti-racism courses and workshops. I want to say it's been about 6 years since I started. And that's when I really, really started to change, to really try to dismantle the wellness industry in general, starting with yoga, which is what I was familiar with, and then branching out. So my decolonization education is really rooted in anti-racism, which is very, very important, because we can't talk about colonialism without understanding the structure of white supremacy. They kind of go hand in hand. So as my views started to get more and more open, and I started to feel freer in criticizing a lot of the decisions that I myself was making in my own life, I decided to look into the wedding industrial complex and was like, oh, I didn't realize that this is a whole capitalist propaganda marketing scheme. It has nothing to do with tradition. It has nothing to do with, sacred ceremony. It is all about capitalism. And when you're in decolonization, you can't subscribe to that.
And that's the thing, right? Like, we think that this institution is part of our American culture.
Right.
And so when we think about culture, we're not talking about the capitalistic side of that, because the culture is capitalism.
Yes.
Wow. And this, you saying that literally just put that in my head, because I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Like, capitalism is the culture.
It is the culture.
And Yeah, and this is how it weaves into everything. We are tricked into thinking, oh, let's get married. We got to have the, there's like the it's going to happen card that you send out. Yeah. Then there's the invitations. Yeah. Then there's, oh my God, all it's like all the things, right? And so, when we touch on colonialism and touch on racism, initiated, of course we know that they go hand in hand. And as we're talking about this, like just last week, knowing that we was going to do this interview today, next thing Rachel Hollis does her thing. And I'm seeing you on Instagram and I'm like, ooh, we're gonna talk about this. So all the things, I have this love-hate relationship with, all the apps. And so I'll get to Rachel Hollis, but I took the Facebook app off my phone, and I'm literally like, I'm really about to take the Instagram app off of my phone as well. And then as I was thinking about that, that's when I saw your thread about Rachel Hollis, and I was like, yeah, but I'm not going to know what this woman just, what this woman is tripping about. And so I literally I was like, Lord, what did this Karen do? And so I heard 5 seconds of her video and I was like, okay, my ears are bleeding. I can't.
It was hard to watch.
It
was extremely hard to watch. Okay. So I can give a little bit of backstory. So Rachel Hollis is not somebody that I knew a whole lot about. I had heard of her book. I think it's called Girl, Wash Your Face or something like that. And I'd heard of it, never picked it up, never read it. It's just not my thing. Like the self-help, industry is not really something I'm very much interested in. And so a friend of mine, Myesha T. Hill, she runs the Check Your Privilege Instagram account, website, and she wrote the book. She had been talking about Rachel Hollis a couple months ago, where she had used a Maya Angelou quote out of line, out of context. And I just didn't feel like I wanted to get into that conversation, because it really, I didn't see how, personally for me, I didn't see how I could talk about what was wrong with that without centering her in a major, major way. And on my account, the first thing you'll see is I center people of color. I talk about our issues. I don't platform any white folks at all. And I, you know, I basically call out whiteness without centering whiteness. I call out the ideology without centering white people. So that's my personal approach. That's what feels good to me in the anti-racism decolonization space. So mm-hmm. when I, you know, cut to last week, when I was hearing a lot of talk about this woman again, I was like, okay, let me see what's happening and if I can speak to it in any way that makes sense. So I watched the video. It was extremely hard to watch. And it just triggered something in me because I could speak to it from my own experience of having and witnessing my mother, who is a Latina brown woman, who had a PhD, or she didn't have a PhD. My father had a PhD, but she had a master's degree. She was working on her PhD, and yet she still had to work for a cleaning service just to put food on the table. And what Rachel Hollis said in her video was a multitude of things, but mostly she was talking about how she was getting backlash over saying she had a housekeeper. But the way that she was talking about this housekeeper was basically saying, this is a person who cleans my toilets. And it was in a very dehumanized way. It wasn't merely stating what she did for her, but she just kept repeating the cleaning the toilets. She cleans my toilets. And for me, that was such a clear lack of humanization for a person who provides a service for you, but that's all you see is that they clean your toilet. That is mm-hmm. extremely problematic. And she never said what her housekeeper's race is, but the statistics tell us that most of the time, housekeepers are brown and black. They yep. are most likely undocumented, and they come from very poor communities. And so it would not surprise me if her housekeeper was either a Latina housekeeper or a black housekeeper or whatever. Right. And so for me, I saw my mother in that context and all of the things that my mother had to do just to be able to put food on our table, despite the fact that she was incredibly intelligent, very self-sufficient, single mom, two kids, was able to put herself through school in a time when the United States was extremely xenophobic, even against its own colonies like Puerto Rico. And in a time when we were just getting through the civil rights movement and basically people of color were being told, you can't go to college, you're not going to be able to afford it, we don't want you here. And she went to an Ivy League school, which they were even more racist than everybody else. And so I just, all of that started flooding in my mind, and I was like, okay, now I can speak to the deeper issue of this without actually centering the person. And, and you know, the post went viral as it does on Instagram. It's so easy to go viral, these days. And what I really wanted people to get is that if you're really dismantling white supremacy, if you're really interested in decolonial mindsets, you have to learn how to take a look at trending problematic people, not just as we're canceling the person. We have to learn how to cancel the entire system. But first, we have to notice how we're contributing to that system in the first place. And that's what the Rachel Hollises don't do. They just see, oh, I'm getting backlash. It's cancel culture. This is what's wrong with cancel culture. No, what you're getting is feedback on your problematic mentality that you're feeding into capitalism and white supremacy, and you're failing to see how that perpetuation is causing harm to the very person that you're saying cleans your toilets and does a service for you. You're benefiting from a system that allows you to dehumanize a person who does a service for you, rather than actually seeing how you're perpetuating and being a part of that capitalist white supremacist system and choosing a different way of acting, being, and speaking. And that is what we need to dismantle.
Amen. I mean, just in reading your post about your mother, I immediately thought about the brief moment in time, like during December, I was laid off, you know, and this was like, what, the third or fourth time, as capitalism does.
Right.
And I picked up a job at, well, two things. I'll go back to the job that I was laid off on, and then I'll talk about what I was doing in between that time, you know, what I'm doing now. So I was working for the grocery delivery service Good Eggs, right?
Yeah.
And so with Good Eggs, like, they had me go to like the South Bay area, and not just regular South Bay, we're talking like Menlo Park, Palo Alto, like all South, like yeah, like all the places where all the white folks in the big houses were. And as I was carrying their groceries in the middle of a worldwide pandemic, I'm driving and I'm like, this is bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm tired of giving these white folks food.
Mm-hmm.
and there were plenty of times I literally just threw the shit on the porch and bounced, didn't ring any doorbells, just like left. And as I was thinking, I was like, I'd gotten so fed up. I was like, I'm not catering to any of y'all anymore.
Right.
And so, like, it was, and me, I'm thinking about my son as I'm, you know, doing this job to help nurture him. And then I'm also thinking, I have a fucking master's degree.
Mm.
Why am I doing, right? And so as you're telling me about your mother, I'm like, son of a bitch, it's, we're doing this again.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
And yeah. And you know, it's deep. It's deep. And then as we're discussing decolonization and then discussing about racism, the other company I was working for, Urban Remedy, which is like, you know, the foo-foo salads and juices. And
yep,
like
I know them well.
Yeah, talking about wellness. You know, at the height of the George Floyd thing, and with all the, you know, the uprisings were happening, I'm not going to call them riots because that makes the people who are doing it wrong. I'm like, no, you're not wrong.
Right.
You know, and so with the uprisings happening, I'm on this company-wide call. And of course, you know, the CEO and the founders are there and they're all doing the Black Lives Matter thing, and all the people that were on the phone call were crying and, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Interesting.
And I'm the, you know, okay, so the company, like middle management or the office people, most of those are Latinx folks, right?
Mm.
There was maybe one other Black person that was there. I want to say he's probably from Africa or whatever. Anyway, and then there was me. And I know there's like a handful of Black folks that are there.
Mm.
But I'm only going to talk for, you know, for myself, mm-hmm. which was me listening to the conversations. And I'm like, you know, the, yes, thank you for saying Black Lives Matter. Okay.
Right.
But I'm sitting back, like, just listening to them. And in the same breath of Black Lives Matter, we need to board up our shops. I'm like,
okay.
Right. I'm like, oh, word?
Interesting.
You know what I mean? And so there is this anger that was just welling up inside of me.
Right.
And I'm like, well, why don't we talk about why people can't eat good food?
Uh-huh.
Because funny enough, when I started working for them, we had, you know, before the pandemic, we had, like, you know, all these brand ambassadors, which I was, so we all showed up, talked to the CEO. Like, I was the first one that raised my hand. I was like, hey, so when are you going to make some cheaper products,
mm-hmm.
to you know, for disadvantaged people to be able to, like, afford your food?
Right.
And then he did the whole, oh, well, you know, you're paying a doctor or you're paying for a food. Choose one. I'm like, people don't know that. People, no.
Well, and even that, like, is problematic, but go ahead.
Exactly. And I'm, yeah. So I was like, do I want to go toe-to-toe with him right now? Because I'm kind of hungry and lunch. I was like, whatever.
Right.
Yeah. So, and then fast forward to, to Black Lives Matter,
mm-hmm.
like, I immediately called my supervisor right after. I was like, y'all need to make, if you really, like, and I said, if you really want to do your part in all of this, there needs to be a product that people can actually afford,
mm-hmm.
so that people can be healthy. Because, you know, like where I live, like you can go a couple blocks down and you won't see a supermarket. All you would see the quintessential liquor store, mm-hmm. you know, and all the things that, and a church's chicken. There's literally a church's chicken down the street right. from where I live now. And so, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So that long-winded whole thing about decolonization and Rachel Hollis and, you know, all that is prevalent, and it proves to me that we haven't learned a thing. And it's also proven to me that, well, instead of trying to make them see, which is what you said, let's just not just separate, but let's not put our focus on these people, because right. they're going to do what they're going to do.
Right. Whiteness is going to continue being white. There's no way around it. Whiteness will continue to be white. However, what we should learn to focus on, because again, white supremacy is the umbrella in which we have all grown up under. And so we could literally sit here for hours dismantling all of the ways in which not only have we seen white supremacy operate, but ways in which we ourselves perpetuate white supremacy. It would literally take months for us to dismantle that. But what I'm interested in is those types of experience, your type of experience, my mother's experience, the other yoga teachers of color's experience. How does that show up in our lives? And how does it affect us, impact us in a way to where we are now showing up radically different, perhaps even more unapologetic than before, and using our experiences as a catalyst for the revolution, not as this like trauma porn that people are so obsessed with, right? What happened with George Floyd and the reason that, you know, you had the experience of being in a mostly white room with white folks crying about how George Floyd died, and then in the same sentence 2 seconds later saying we need to board up our stores. There's a reason for that, because they can see the trauma and are affected by the trauma. They still didn't see the human being and his full life and all of the experiences that came before his death that contributed to that specific moment in time. They couldn't see that. And instead, what they were choosing to see was the traumaticness of the moment. And then also being threatened by people of color having a revolution within themselves, right? It's not the revolution of, oh, you know, now we see white supremacy for what it is. We've seen it for what it is. It's white folks that are now just waking up to the fact that white supremacy lives within everybody and is not just the KKK members. But we, as people of color, were waking up to the fact that not one more person needs to experience police brutality under our watch. It has been too many people. It has been for way too long. We need to do something about this. That was our revolutionary stance. But they are so threatened by that, that even though they could see that what happened to George Floyd in those 9 minutes and 26 seconds was incredibly traumatic and it was murder, they still don't see people of color as valid human beings who are enraged by witnessing the death of a man who was handcuffed, who was not posing a threat. And they, white folks, see that as, we're scared of your rage. We're scared that you're going to retaliate. We're scared that you are going to dismantle our capitalist systems by way of, you know, coming to our stores and raiding or whatever they thought was going to happen. And, but thoughts and prayers, right? And, yeah. And it doesn't make sense. And for us, that's where the rage comes from.
Yep.
It's both the police brutality and the mentality that allows the police brutality to continue to exist. It is every single white liberal that has decided to post a black square, and yet when they go to the grocery store, they are cussing out the black cashier because they simply can't stand the fact that they are having computer issues, or they are talking
about, or ordering the food and having a person of color carry it to them.
Exactly. Cater to them. Make sure that you do things the way I want you to do them. And the moment that you don't, I'm going to tell you exactly who owns the who has the power, who owns this place. And that is the rage that people of color were showing up to the streets in, rightfully so. But what bothers me is that we're a year out, we're now having the trial of Derek Chauvin, and white folks still have no idea how to show up as allies, have no idea that even if you are showing up as an ally, that is not enough. We need accomplices and we need co-conspirators, because it's going to take a lot of people and a lot of time and a lot of resources in order for us to really dismantle white supremacy from the bottom up. So I get really worked up about this, particularly in the wellness industry, because the wellness industry is meant to provide tools for people like myself, and yet people like myself continue to be excluded from having access to those tools. Why? Because again, it is white folks who own the systems, who own the studios, who have access to the healthy food, as you were saying, and refuse. They are more focused on the profits rather than creating the equity and creating the access so that everybody can be well. But under this capitalist system, only the people who can afford it can be well. And that, to me, is not wellness.
Right. And isn't it crazy? Like, you know, we're talking about, you know, wellness and everything that encompasses it, you know, and it's ironic that we have something like this pandemic, and now that the vaccine is out and about, which is a whole other thing. Mm-hmm. My whole stance on it is, okay, fine, the vaccine, but what about all the things we should be doing to be healthy, period? Mm-hmm. That would, you know, like, if we understand science, mm-hmm. right, we know that we have to eat well, fruits and veggies and all that other good stuff that has the minerals and vitamins that we need that will block off viruses, period. Mm-hmm. Like, all of a sudden, it's, we got to take this vaccine. I'm not pro or anti-vaccine anyway. I do have my particular stance on it and my choice, you know. But, and at the same time, I'm like, we're not talking about how to be well. We're not talking about health. We're not talking about, hey, go out and exercise. Hey, take these supplements. Hey, you know what? While you're taking these supplements, this is how you can get it to absorb into your body so you can, so your body can process it more efficiently. That will keep, you know, it'll keep you from being sick. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it's maddening, you know, especially now that I'm seeing online, like, everybody's taking their vaccine. Look at me, I got my card. Look at me, join the club and all that stuff. Yeah. And, you know, again, I'll say again, I'm not pro or against. I'm literally neutral. And I'm not just saying that because I'm, you know, I'm doing a podcast. I am literally neutral on this matter, simply because of the fact I know what science has done to people of color before. And And I know what is happening now. You know, take that for what it is. But I just find it ironic that, you know, now we're talking about wellness, we're talking about social issues, how this vaccine has played into our culture, and how and why people of color are hesitant to take the vaccine.
Well, and you now know? And now being demonized for not wanting to take the vaccine. So, exactly. So here's the real issue is, the reason we got into pandemic mode was not by any fault of anybody. It's literally climate change doing its thing, right? It's humans causing, and particularly the West, meaning the United States, is the number one, you know, society that contributes to climate change. But it's climate change doing its thing, and that climate change causing a huge impact on very small communities who are literally just trying to survive. And then something like this happens, right? Because this happens literally every year. I don't think people understand this, but new diseases pop up every single year. So this is not something new. It's just that this particular strain is so incredibly powerful that our human bodies have not, just literally have no idea how to handle it, right? Our immune systems just aren't equipped. So, but we had a president that was blaming China particularly and Chinese people. His anti-Asian rhetoric was creating a bubble of society that chose to align with that racist ideology. And right. And then we have a whole white population that thinks that has collective amnesia around how they have treated people of color as guinea pigs, literal guinea pigs, since, you know, the last 500 years since this country was created. And right. And now we are the ones that are being affected the most. If you take a look at the statistics of who are the people who are getting infected and who are dying, it is predominantly black and brown folks, particularly the Latinx community. And not only are we being infected and dying more and at higher rates, but we remember, we don't have that collective amnesia of what white folks no. and what capitalism has done to our physical bodies as experimentation for the cure for white folks to have.
Right.
And so right. you can't really.
There is a list.
There is a long list, a long list. So you can't really sit there and then say, oh, the reason this pandemic is going to continue is because of people of color not taking this vaccine. Number one, it is affecting us the most. And the only reason you care about having the vaccine is because you want to keep capitalism running. And who does capitalism exploit? It is black and brown people. So of course you want to demonize us for having second thoughts around a vaccine. It just baffles me the way that people don't really take a consideration on both history and racism in one. But mostly people's current experiences, right? Let's say that you do have that, you know, amnesia and you've never read a history book in your life, right? Okay, fine. Let's take the experience of people of color right now. Most people of color do not have health insurance. What does that mean?
Right.
They can't go to a doctor. They can't check out if they, you know, they can get cures for any diseases that they might have. They can't get birth control. They're not able to get the access to the care for instance, cancer, which takes a really long time to heal, as well as a really long time for it to, you know, make a human being suffer. There are a multitude of things that happen to a person when they don't have health insurance. It makes them act in a certain way, right? It makes them avoid certain situations. And I speak from experience. I don't have health insurance because I am self-employed. I don't have a typical job. I've been working for myself for the last 2 years. So for the last 2 years, I've not had health insurance. Well, what happens if I do try to go out and get the health insurance? I either have to go through the government or through a private institution. Private institution is going to cost me $500 a month. No, thank you. I don't have that type of money. So right. my other option is going through a government institution. Okay, great. So what happens if my application gets denied? What happens if, too many people are trying to sign up for health insurance at that same time and I'm just not able to get through the system? I continue not to have health insurance. So how does that make me act and move in the world? Well, the way that it happened for me is that my social justice activism had to remain digital, because if I go out into the streets and I'm protesting with 100,000 people, which is what showed up in Los Angeles this summer, if I happen to get, COVID in that protest, what happens? I have to go to the emergency room. I have to get treated. I have to get on a respirator. I'm coming home. If I survive, I'm coming home with a $100,000 hospital bill. Guess who is not going to be able to pay that? Me. Guess right. who's not going to be able to do their activism? Me. So I have to stay home. And my work now has to look very different than it did before. And guess what? I'm not able to employ that many more people if my activism looks a little bit different. I have to create equity in other ways. And I have, and it's great. I had to get creative. However, I'm not able to do the same things that other people are able to do simply because my anxiety levels are through the roof anytime I have to make a decision around, can I show up to this or that? Because I don't have the basic level of care that I need in case I get sick.
Have you do you use cannabis?
I stopped only because I didn't like the feeling of it. It just wasn't working for, you know, it just wasn't working for me anymore, but I was for a little bit. Yeah.
Okay, cool. No, I say that because now I'm a delivery driver for them for a platform.
Yeah.
And I got top secret shit that's happening that I will not talk about right now.
Okay.
Only because I'll tell you offline. But
I want the hookup.
It's some pretty deep and fun shit that's about to happen that I just can't believe is happening.
Wow.
But I can't wait for it. But yeah, so since it's been legal, I've been using and I've been studying,
mm-hmm.
You know, the social applications of mm-hmm. it, the hows and whys and all that stuff. And during this time, it has helped me out tremendously,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I totally get it. Some people, you know, they get the paranoid bit, you know. For me, you know, I take a little bit, whether I'm smoking it or whether I take an edible,
mm-hmm.
and if I have the day off, I just chill and I relax.
Yeah.
I'm playing with my son. It's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not like, yeah, I'm not like spread out on the couch like I can't move or anything, but it's like,
which,
it's,
listen, there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. We all need rest.
Right. Yes. 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 After realizing how much I can take before I reach that edge of
mm-hmm.
I can't move.
Right.
Now that I know that level, I'm like, oh, okay, all right, you know, take half of this and, you know, I'll be able to like play some video games.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah. And just, you know, chill. But yeah, but it's crazy, not crazy that you said that, but, you know, when we're talking about taking things digitally, like the one thing, you know, I actually wrote down in my notes is like, you know, God, the internet is a catch 22.
It really
like,
is.
It's a double edged sword, right?
Really
like
is.
It's, man, because I'm sitting up here thinking as I'm like about to take all these social media apps off of my phone, I'm like, but damn, like the internet wins. Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't even know what that really means other than like it always wins.
It
like,
always wins.
You're
it
like
always.
You're gonna have a exactly. Like, you're going to have a Rachel Hollis saying some shit.
Yep.
You're going to have a white supremacist dying,
mm-hmm.
like, what, Prince Philip?
Mm-hmm.
And then you got to have DMX dying at the same time. And then you got Kerry Washington talking about, oh, rest in peace, the two of you. Well, what are they talking about?
Yeah.
I know what DMX is doing. He's beating that ass. That's what. That's what's happening,
right,
Miss Washington.
Right.
Love you on Scandal, but Let's figure out what
that
we're
was.
Doing.
That was a swing and a miss, Miss Washington.
Yes.
Yeah.
Love you though.
No, I hear you. I think I have a very interesting relationship with social media, only because it allows me to do my work in a greater way, and it allows me to really focus on the communities that I care about. And get the support that I need in order to continue creating events, retreats, mm. programs, mentorships, things like that for people of color. And it is a toxic space. It is incredibly damaging to people's mental health, mine in particular.
Mm-hmm.
When I guess I was pretty naive when I started this work that I didn't realize how much social media was going to affect me in both a positive and negative way. And I'm still trying to find the balance, because a lot of the work I do stems from my relationships through social media. I have been able to connect with activists from all over the world, They have now become my friends and like actual friends where we take it offline. We, you know, have conversations. We celebrate each other's birthdays and accomplishments, book releases. Like, it has been incredible. A lot of my students come from social media, and they have been some of my most devoted students through my Patreon educational work, any programs that I have around anti-racism. They are super down for it. Any panels that I have with leaders of color and experts of color, they sign up immediately. So my biggest fans have come from social media, and I have gotten death threats. I have gotten calls for my own suicide. I have experienced the most egregious forms of racism on social media as well. So the idea that the internet wins, it really does at the end of the day, only because we are able to get regular people to share their experiences that otherwise wouldn't be platformed. And I'm here for that all day long. What becomes toxic about it is that because the regular everyday person can share their opinions, whether they are educated or not, intelligent or not, anti-racist or not, that creates an atmosphere where everyone thinks that they are an expert and that their opinions should be validated. And the moment that is not validated, then the worst of human behavior can come out. And that's what I've experienced. Right. So it's a love and hate relationship with social media, I swear.
Yeah. I know. As I'm going to promote this show.
Exactly.
As we do.
Exactly.
But cool. I wanted to get your take on it. Just because, you know, you do this, like you do this kind of work. Like, it's your life. Mm-hmm. I comment on it. Mm-hmm. I reflect on it.
Right.
So, you know, let me just take this time to say thank you for putting in the work.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for fighting. I'm appreciative of what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and that's why I wanted you to come on this show.
Wow. Well, thank you. And what,
you're so welcome.
What a difference, you know, a couple years makes from, you know, being one of my students in the yoga studio to now, you know, me being a guest on your podcast. It's look at God. Look at God.
Right? You know, just thinking about all these things, like, wow, you know, like just the way that things fall into place, I don't look at it as an accident per se.
Right.
Like whenever I know I make a connection, like I know there's something inside of me that knows that it's going to come back, you know?
Yeah.
So I definitely dig that. And speaking of wellness and speaking of yoga, for, you know, like I wanted to make sure that, you know, if we were going to dog out Square One Yoga, I wanted to at least say that there is one yoga platform I just found out a little while ago. I don't know, maybe you've heard of it. It's called Black to Yoga. They're on IG,
yes.
But they offer, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So for those of you who are interested, you don't have to be Black, I guess, but you know, you can subscribe to them and you can pay money.
Support the work, yeah.
To support the work of awesome people of color teaching yoga and all that great stuff. So give them your money, basically.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. And I'll give a shout out to my friend Paris. She owns a Brooklyn yoga studio called BK Yoga Club. And awesome. And it's for all identities, but it is owned by two Black women. They have online classes now, so you do not have to be in Brooklyn to take their classes. They are fully virtual, so I want to give them a shout out. And there are lots and lots and lots of more people of color opening up studios, wellness, tarot, you know, all the things, all the different
nice.
Types of wellness tools that you need. You know, they're bringing their work digitally. And I'm so here for that. That's exactly what we need. We need wellness practices that aren't centered around colonial wellness and aren't centered around whiteness, basically, you know, refeeding us the wellness that they stole from us in the first place. So
yeah, we're gonna take this yoga practice and then we're gonna spin it around and then we're gonna sell it back to
exactly
you.
Exactly. Or, Reiki, Reiki is going through its own colonization right now. We've got, Santeria has also gone through its own level of colonization. Hoodoo, which is African American spirituality. White folks are trying to co-opt that. So, it's really
Hoodoo. Damn, like, what the hell?
I know. There is literally a white man living in New Orleans who owns a hoodoo shop, and he is teaching hoodoo on YouTube. Can you even?
Oh my God. Okay. All right. And literally that is the point where I put the phone down. And I go out. So I was like nope.
Exactly. I'm done.
Yeah. Done for the day. Check, please. Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. So we need more of us out there. We need more of us doing things for our own communities, doing it in an accessible way, doing it in a way that really nourishes our communities rather than sets us back. So I'm here for it. Yeah. BK Yoga Club, check them out. Check out all the other, wellness practices that are being taught by people of color, particularly, from indigenous people who are practicing their indigenous lineage as well. So, yeah, I'm here for all of it.
Cool. Awesome. So before we sign off, and before I want you to let everybody know what classes you teach, like where you are in the Matrix, aka Instagram, Facebook, as we're talking about spending your money for wellness services, like, it's just so awesome to know that since this whole thing, like, I've literally been slowly but surely pulling my money out of things like, hey, you know what, instead of buying your toiletries or whatever bathroom stuff from Target, which is the go-to thing, I'm like, let me see if I can find out where I can find some deodorant somewhere. So I'm like, yo, I found a place in Maryland. There's also a local company here, Ioba in Oakland, and then Netter Gold, like for soap. I'm like, soap, toilet paper. I'm like, nope, got to be black owned. Like, I'm slowly pulling shit out. Now, I literally, like, I became a sneakerhead not too long ago. And, as I'm like, eyes watering over getting the latest Nikes, I'm like, nope, not buying Nikes anymore. Rock deep. Like, okay. I got my first pair of shoes. I'm like, now I'm looking at another pair of shoes. I'm like, yeah. So I'm literally like, it's a slow process. Yep. Next up, Amazon.
Okay.
fuck Amazon, basically. Yeah. I don't like, and literally, okay. So here's the funniest shit. So my son and I, we're doing the whole comic book thing, right? And we're sitting down, we're looking at all this shit, and we're sitting down, just chit-chatting in the living room. And he was like, Dad, if Lex Luthor was real, he'd be Jeff Bezos.
Pretty much.
I looked at him, I was like,
pretty much.
Damn. Yeah.
Yeah.
Look at this. I'm like,
it would be all, basically every single billionaire that exists is a Lex Luthor.
Basically. yeah. But he was like, he's bald and he's got a lot of money and he's evil. And I'm like, you're not wrong.
Not wrong at all.
Not wrong. All right, Ileana, I know you got to go. Okay. Tell us about your services. Where are you on Facebook and all that stuff?
Yeah.
Give us your D.
So my website is embodyinclusivity.com. So you can find all of the different type of work that I do there. My Instagram is at Eliana.Chinea, Chinea. I also have my Embody Inclusivity account at Embody Inclusivity. And that's pretty much where I am as far as like social media goes, website goes. And then you can also find me on my Patreon, which I am providing exclusive workshops and commentary, opinion pieces, and panels with other leaders of color and activists of color. And the Patreon is patreon.com/ConstanzaEliana. So that's how you can find me.
Awesome. I am so happy I was able to get you on. Really, really am. Like, literally, my mouth was watering. Like, oh my God, she's talking about this. She's talking about, I'm chomping at the bit, So thanks again for the hard work. Thanks for putting it in. Thanks for killing me after every yoga session. I'm telling you guys, she's like, what? You're like, what, 5'2"?
Almost. Yeah.
Almost 5'2"? 5'2". Ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you something. She's like this short, she's like a shorty, and she was teaching like yoga for strength, and you're gonna die. Ooh. And I loved every class. Yeah. Every class. But hey, thanks a lot for coming on, and yeah. I want to have you back, so let's make that happen next time.
Yes, definitely, and I'm so honored to be here. Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right.
Thanks for tuning in on another episode of LJ Presents. As always, you can find me on my website at ljeffreymoore.com, Twitter at ljeffreymoore, and on Instagram at ljeffrey.moore. If you like what the show has to offer and you'd like to make a contribution, make sure to check out my Patreon page. Your contribution is always appreciated. Make sure to check back next week for another great guest. See you then.
Favorite color.